You are about to listen to an episode of The Cypher before it was The Cypher. For our first 75 episodes, we were known as Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, and we had a slightly different format. In all honesty, our production value and sound quality today is much improved from these early episodes. That said, the content is so great that these shows are a valuable part of our archive. If you want more information about our transition, make sure to check out episode 76 with Ritz, which was our first one under the new name. To keep up to date on everything involving The Cypher, visit us online at thecyphershow.com or find us on iTunes. And now, without further ado, here's The Cypher before The Cypher. Welcome to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, a weekly series that brings you exclusive, in-depth conversations with some of the most interesting and exciting figures in hip-hop. We're brought to you by RapGenius.com, your source on the internet for decoding, annotating, and analyzing rap lyrics. I'm your host, Same Old Sean. This week, we bring you a special two-part show focusing on new, up-and-coming artists. In part one of our show, we talk to Kid Static, a New York via Chicago via Los Angeles rapper whose superb new album, It Gleams, features electronic-tinged beats and smart, engaging lyrics. This solo release follows a successful run in a duo with Ye Big. We talk to Static about his hometowns, his penchant for extended metaphors, and his second career as a movie stuntman. In the second half of our show, we chat with the Harlem-based Ghetto Millionaire crew, Ock 2Gs, Baby Thad, and Sita Monroe. Ock, Thad, and crew member General have extensive music industry histories, and we hear all about their current doings, as well as stories about their times around Raekwon, ODB, Kid Capri, R. Kelly, Jay-Z, and lots more. But first, here's what happened when we sat down with Kid Static in a coffee shop near our Rap Genius office in Brooklyn. We started by asking him about what it was like to be solo after a long time working in a duo setting. So the stuff you did before was in a duo format, right? The records before that. How is it different to be a solo artist this time out?
I think I actually started out as a solo artist, and the Ye Big Kid Static project came kind of out of nowhere. And when you have two people putting in work, it kind of gels into something stronger. Mm-hmm. And so that project actually overshadowed my solo work for a while.
Right.
And then now I'm
so
back to putting out solo material.
You didn't intend that to material. Be kind of a long-term duo thing at first?
It's actually still in the works. Like, we're still doing it, but he went back to school and he wants to be a sociology teacher.
Right.
So, you know, helping out the kids and doing something like other than being a selfish musician is a little more important to him. Me, you know, I like making music, and so that's what I'm going to continue to do.
Awesome. Speaking of collaborations, I want to talk to you about Shy City, the collaboration with the Hood Internet. I love the video. It was super funny. For people who haven't seen it, it's the video concept is it's the 3016 Olympics, and there are sort of bizarre events like extreme ironing. And it's really funny. I was hoping you could tell us about it, give us maybe a little behind the scenes, and just kind of go into what it was like working with comedians rather than, you know, producers or musicians.
Hood Internet has been doing the mashup thing for a long time, and we've performed with it multiple times, and we have a really good energy together. And so when they wanted to do some original production, they were branching out from just using other people's work into making their own. They said, hey, we wanted an MC or a rapper on this. Who we call? They called me because we had worked so well together previously. And we just did like a two song, 7-inch, and it came out really well. Their songs were more poppy than I usually worked with, and so I put, you know, vocals that I thought felt that fit that that genre, and it came out to be something completely different, and I absolutely loved it.
Nice. Yeah, yeah, the thing about that tune is, like, it sounds big, but not in a, you know, it sounds almost like a kind of, like, I don't know, super commercial, almost like DJ Khaled vibe, except in this kind of winking way.
Yeah.
That kind of fits the attitude of the tune in the video.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I think that's kind of what the whole new record is. I've been telling people for years I wanted to make a pop album.
Yeah.
And even when I go into that, like, kind of stereotypical, like, world of, you know, pop music, I would hope that people would take a look at my other stuff and go, hey, this guy is kind of, like, you know, sarcastically or kind of having fun with this genre.
Yeah. So when you first got here, we were talking off camera, and we talked about Rocks and Toothpicks for a second, and that's probably my favorite song off the new record. I was really taken with it, especially the concept of the song, which takes all, like, throwing stones at glass houses idea and really expands on it and makes it sort of a song-length extended metaphor. I was wondering if you could talk about that tune a little bit.
That whole song originated with a feeling I had. I was just mad, and I actually don't remember the exact situation, but it was just something that I'd felt wronged, and I really thought that there were no songs kind of delving into, you know, just like that moment where you feel either, you know, like, just like those harsher emotions. Like, a lot of people go, oh man, gun clap, like, whatever, I'll clap you back, or like, whatever, but they don't really you know, go really, really micro into it. So I just wanted to, through the whole song, just express, like, man, this song is, like, it's hard, it's got a lot of anger to it, and it's actually really fun to do live, because a lot of people associate with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of songs that are, you know, angry, Boxing Day is a real scary portrait of this relationship that's totally dissolving. Can you talk a bit about writing that? Was it depressing to write about a scenario that was, like, so dark?
I think for me, music is therapy. Some people call doctors. I sit down and I write. Actually, it's funny you asked me that, because I was at a party recently, and a guy came up to me. He's like, man, your kid's static. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, man, I really like your music, but why is it so depressing? And I go, hey, man, you know, like, everybody has these feelings. And when you're sad, you want to listen to sad music. You know, when you're happy, you want to listen to happy music, something that'll express or maybe make it feel like somebody else is feeling that way.
Yeah.
So in Boxing Day, that was actually a long time before that relationship actually ended, but I saw it coming. So to be in the mindset where you see it coming, but you can't really express it to the other person, because that will speed up the end of something that you don't want to necessarily end.
Right.
Like, it's rough. So
yeah. It's
but I think the song itself is beautiful in its sadness.
Definitely.
Yeah.
One more tune I wanted to talk about, t-shirts and sneakers. Just a real love of those two items. What kind of sneakers are you rocking today?
I'm wearing my all black Chucks. This is what I wear when I'm on the road, because I have a bunch of shoes, and I don't like to mess them up, because I'm actually tired of cleaning them off with toothbrushes and, like, toothpaste and baking soda. So when I know I'm going to be gone for a while, and I don't want to pack, because I only travel carry-on these days, because it's so annoying to do otherwise.
And so expensive.
And to have to pack, like, six pairs of shoes, I'm done with that. So these are my kick-around shoes. That's what I call them. The all-black Chucks. I have, like, four pairs of these. And I just, like, put them on, and I walk around, get them dirty. Yeah.
Nice. So what's your favorite pair that you have?
Man, still, I have these Burberry Dunks that I have saved for, I think, like, 4 years at this point. I got caught in a rainstorm with them once, so now I just, like, leave them unless it's, like, you know, they're basically house shoes. They're so warm, and they're comfortable, and they have that, you know, pattern on the outside, and they're all just soft and beautiful and comfortable. I love them.
Nice. Now, one unusual thing, I was looking at your bio, and you can tell me, you know, if this is right or not. It mentioned you were raised on Motown.
Yeah.
And also West African music.
Yeah, that's my dad.
So that's a weird combination. How'd that come about?
My dad plays hand percussion, So he had a pair of bongos in the house, and he plays djembe now. Mm-hmm. But that was always his influence. He came from a very like Afrocentric household, and my upbringing was very Afrocentric because he thought you need to know where you come from to know where you're going. Mm-hmm. And so we would go to like the festivals and hear music from like all parts of Africa. And one of my first memories was my dad in the living room just rocking out. Like, he's got this one dance he does, and just like with this music just blasting, and him just like sitting there doing this dance in the middle of the living room. Like, it's insane. And that just continued, and it's definitely influenced me. Wow. To this day.
So, having such a grounding in African music, did you listen to like American black music, pop and R&B and hip hop and stuff differently? Yeah. Because of that?
I think you notice the rhythms faster. I don't know if I listened to it differently, because a lot of music you can just listen to and for the music, but once you know where things come from, yeah, that starts to pop up. Like when you learn a new word and you didn't notice it before, and then all of a sudden you hear it everywhere.
Yeah,
it's that kind of thing.
Nice. Excellent. So moving from drums to more electronic stuff, pretty much all of your music, minus maybe some guitar and stuff, is electronic.
Yeah.
From what I could hear.
Sure.
Can you tell me a little bit about your relationship to technology? I know you're also a web programmer and stuff, and why the very sparing use of at least in air quotes, real instruments?
I think more when you have to work with other people, you can't produce as fast. People's schedules get in the way. And sometimes when I have an idea in my head and I want to get it down, I just flesh it out myself. Mm-hmm. But on this new record, I actually, I went out and I found the people who are the best for those jobs, because I will say I play drums and I play keys, but I'm by no means the best at those instruments.
Yeah.
And so sometimes when you have something in your head, you have to settle, because you can't execute it the way that you hear it.
Right.
And so to find other people, when you say, I want it to be this, and then they go, oh, I know what you're talking about, and they actually put it down, like, that's a whole new experience. And I think that in the interest of getting exactly what you want as the final, instead of being able to like, hey, I just want this down, like, it's a completely different thing.
Awesome. So as someone who hosts a podcast, I couldn't help notice that you provide us with some competition with your webcast there. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I actually did a campaign to help fund some of the new record and sell some pre-orders of the new record before it came out on pledgemusic.com.
Right.
I don't know if you're familiar.
I know Pledge, yeah.
And
Pledge.
So basically, one of the people who pledged for the campaign actually works for Stickam. Mm-hmm. And he said, hey, man, I work for this site. I had actually never heard of it. And he goes, I'd be awesome if you would, do a couple webcasts. And then I did it, and I liked it so much that he's like, hey, man, we can feature you every Sunday. And it's insane. Like, people really participate, and they ask you questions, and it's probably the best way I've found to directly connect with people who find out about you and want to know about you. So, yeah.
Awesome. So, rumor has it you're an expert at the free running style known as parkour.
I don't know if I'd say expert. I'm good at it. I'm good at it. This guy's way better than I am. Like, some of the guys in Europe, and especially some of the younger cats coming up, where they can get hurt and heal fast.
Yeah.
I'm getting past that point. And so, I'll still do flips, but I don't do nearly as many tricks. I don't do, giant falls, gaps, leaps, because my knees and ankles from years of skateboarding are pretty much dust.
Right.
So I still train it. It's the best thing I know to stay in shape. And so, yeah, I've been doing it since, like, 2004.
Wow.
Yeah. And nice. It's just something that I just keep in the cut. Like, people don't know. And then I'll be out with a bunch of people and I'll toss a flip off something. And people go, what the hell was that? Yeah.
Nice. Are we going to do free running now that you're in the city for a bit? Seems like it provides some good opportunities.
First thing I did was contact in New York Parkour and try and hook up with them. But I've been super busy and it hasn't been able to work out.
Nice. And you've parlayed that even into stunt work, right?
Yeah, I have. Nice. I actually, the last huge thing I did was... that movie, I Am Legend, with Will Smith.
Yeah, yeah.
I was one of the stunt performers in that movie.
Nice. Yeah. How was that?
It was cool. I mean, it was a huge, huge production. Right. And as my first stunt gig, that was amazing. Yeah.
Nice. Excellent. So there was one thing I was looking at you on Twitter the other day, and I noticed you tweeted something that caught my interest. Said you didn't like use the word passive pop songs.
Oh yeah.
And so I was curious what exactly that means, what that means to you, and how you make sure your own work doesn't fall into these traps.
I think I meant specifically that "Call Me Maybe" song by Carly Rae Jepsen, whatever her name is.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're. I know how old she is. I don't want to blow her shit up, but like, you're a grown ass woman. Like, why are you writing songs like "Call Me Maybe"?
Right.
I'm like, as an adult in this world, if you want something, you ask for it, right?
Yeah.
And so, actually, like, the next tweet I did was a play on that song, which was I don't remember exactly what I said, but it was like, "Hi, this is like," it was basically like, "Hey, what's up? This happens often. Give me your number and I'll call you definitely." You know, like, it was just basically like, people complain about how, you know, things don't go their way, but they don't do the things necessary to make them happen.
Right. And that's a problem, not just in pop songs,
but it's a problem in life. Yeah.
Nice. So you grew up and, you know, born and raised in Chicago.
Yeah.
One of my favorite cities. I really love it. What do you think of this new batch of Chicago artists? It seems to be really getting a lot of national attention in the wake of the I Don't Like remix.
Yeah, you're talking about, like, Chief Keef
and
like,
King
all
Louis
those kids.
And all those guys. And this is just between us.
I say good for them, man. Honestly, I can't knock anybody's hustle, but I don't feel like they're doing anything different.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Chief Keef, with all due respect, he's doing huge right now. Good for him for being signed and, you know, making moves at his age. Mm-hmm. But I feel like he's still inexperienced in a lot of ways. And I don't know him personally, but I will say that the thing I have seen multiple times is you get on at that age and you already think you're the shit. And so you don't listen to people who try and kind of meld you into a sensible, more, I guess, professional artist.
Sure.
You know, you might miss some of the traps that come up.
Right, and getting on at that age, often the people, there are really no people who would warn you because they just want you to keep doing what
exactly,
you do.
Exactly. And so I will say, you know, good, man. There are things about him that remind me of Waka.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that, especially that age with no real life experience of your own, like, he does have some hard stuff in him, but that usually comes from the immaturity of youth and having the right perspective on that, being able to take those experiences and examine them and know what you should take from them. Not, man, I got caught, I'm gonna not do that next time, you know. But it's cool, man. I listen to them. I won't say I don't. I listen to all those dudes and everything Chicago. I'm almost knee jerkingly behind. Like, just like instant reaction is go Chicago.
Yeah. I noticed that from the people I know who live there. Real boosters of the town.
For sure.
The culture there. So we were talking off camera. You're leaving. You were in LA for a while.
Yeah, for about 2 years.
What was that like?
It's amazing. I think that there's a very healthy DIY scene there, which is where I actually came into it.
Right, you live in Echo Park, right?
Yeah, from I came in on the side of the DIY punk scene, like the smell scene, the real real pop punk, dirty underground, and so I learned a lot. I have a lot of people I love to death there. And I made some moves. I got some things going, but it's time to move on.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have pegged you for I can see the DIY thing, but I wouldn't have pegged you being in a scene with a lot of punk bands. How did that come about?
I mean, that's me really. I like the whole like that's. I guess I will go back to Ye Big Kid Static.
Yeah.
In the way that people would see us and be like, you guys are more punk rock than some punk bands. I know we played every show possible. We played with metal bands, punk bands. We played, people kept trying to put us on hip hop shows. And we go, actually, that's our least favorite show to play. Because they one, it's not about the music. It's a lot about image.
Yeah.
It's a lot about, you know, oh, we're the shit. There's a lot of egos involved. I think some of the best shows and best promoters I've met have had nothing to do with hip-hop. Also, the scene itself is more welcoming to different things, like especially with hip-hop, when you come in and you can't easily be pegged, people go, I don't know. But with like punk kids, they're like, man, this is awesome because I like it. And so it's just a whole different world.
Excellent. Well, you're in the right now in the home of DIY spaces,
for
right?
Sure.
Right in this neighborhood.
I've played Galapagos Art Space.
Mm-hmm.
I've played, Cake Shop a bunch. I know it's not in the same neighborhood,
right.
But the only bands I've seen there have been like real, like kind of grimy, same kind of thing. I've played a lot of New York space, and I'm hoping I can fit in that scene directly and see how that goes.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, so obviously, like we were talking about, you're moving to New York City.
I am.
You're looking forward to it?
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. In about a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excellent.
To go home, pack all my shit up, put it in boxes, and then...
Nice. So I was looking at your website, and I noticed that something very unusual for artists. You don't have just your own music on there. It's not just my bio, my songs, I'm so awesome. You curate it like a real blog. You know, this is what I'm listening to, this is what I'm enjoying, this is what's going on. Why do that? That's pretty unusual.
I like music. And so, I mean, if you want to see what I write, you can go to the album section and, like, all that is my stuff, you know? Or if you want to look up Kid Static, you know, you can find my stuff anywhere on iTunes. But I feel like my blog is my outlet to say, hey, look, you know, I found... I'm actually really, really in touch with, like, you know, what's going on as far as, like, the internet is concerned.
Right.
And so when I hear a new act, I'm often the first person among, like, my circles to find out about it. And then people go, oh, man, where has this been? I wish I heard about them, like, forever ago. And so I was like, well, why don't I just start posting this stuff to my blog? And then, you know, people have access to it. And then I'm like, hey, you know, there's this new music out. Go listen to it. You know, I like it. Maybe you'll like it, too. And that's why I started doing that.
Awesome. So who should we be keeping an eye out for now?
Actually, since this album, I've kind of been silent.
Sure.
Like, I wrote a whole bunch, and I had nothing but my music in my head for a really long time. I actually just found out about this band that I really, really like. And maybe it'll come into my head, but I can't think of it right now.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, I've been pretty much, I need some peace for a while.
Sure.
Like, you need to step away from the music.
I hear that. And and finally, you know, since you are, you know, on a talking to us, we always like to get artists' impressions of our site. And I kind of ran you through the basics of it before we started.
I think it's really cool. Like, I've never seen anything like that. I've seen lyric sites before.
Sure.
And none of them actually let the artists come on and comment on their own work, because a lot of the lyric sites get it wrong. And even because by listening to it with different inflections and different tones, you can't really tell what people are saying sometimes. And so to allow the person who is the most expert on those lyrics to come forward and, you know, have some say, that's really cool.
We'll be right back with the second half of our special new artist edition of Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, where we talk to Harlem's Ghetto Millionaire Crew. Welcome back to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. I'm your host, Same Old Sean. In the second half of our show, we feature a chat with Oc2Gs, Baby Thad, and Sita Monroe. Along with General, they make up the Ghetto Millionaires, a crew that has gained a lot of attention in their native Harlem and beyond recently for their solo and collaborative efforts. Each of the members have extensive music industry history and have lots of fascinating stories to tell about their own ups and downs in the business. But we began by asking Oc for the meaning behind the Ghetto Millionaire idea.
Can you tell me a little bit about Ghetto Millionaire? You say that it's a lifestyle, not a movement. What does that mean exactly?
Basically, everybody is we consider to be a ghetto millionaire. Whether no culture, creed, color, race, you know what I mean? Like, everybody's a ghetto millionaire because you might go to work during the day, then you come home and you still gotta hustle. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just naturally in everybody's life, just maybe to have a little hustle on the side, you know what I mean? Whether it be good or bad, you know what I mean? So we just kind of summed it up by just saying, be a ghetto millionaire, you know what I mean? It's a lifestyle, because it's something that you really more live more than it just be something you just promote. Like, you know what I mean? This is what we do on a day-to-day basis, you know what I mean?
Awesome. And speaking of what you do on a day-to-day basis, when I first met you, it was in Harlem. I think 147th and St. Nick,
right around there.
At Francis Place. It's an area that's meant a lot to hip-hop.
Right?
You had Big L shouting out, you know, it's like nine blocks from where Big L shouted out on Danger Zone, right?
Right.
Put Killer Cameron, inspiration for Rap Genius.
Exactly, right. and Cam, as Muckbug pointed out.
We're going to call the site Cam Genius.
Yeah, really? No, not a joke. Not a joke. Completely serious. Rap Genius only exists because of Cameron, who also is from that area.
Right.
Obviously, there was the original Harlem World way, way back.
Mm-hmm. Rest in peace, Huddy Combs.
Yeah. What does being a Harlem rapper mean? What makes being a Harlem rapper different than being from anywhere else?
More swag. We deal with trend setting. Mm-hmm. We deal with more the fashion culture of it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we can change it up at any time. That's why I kind of respect what the ASAP Rockies and, you know what I mean? Because he took the fashion part of Harlem, not really so much the music. You know what I mean? The music changes as time goes.
Excellent. And one more thing before we bring the rest of your crew on. I know you have a big single coming out any day now.
Yes.
With kind of a surprising guest on the hook. You want to talk about that?
I got this record with Drake on it, and it's called Are You Down? I got it through my boy Tez from Young Money. Shout out Tez. He's the president over there. And it was supposed to go on his album, but I think he just didn't make the album. It was like halfway done. So he sent it over to me. It was like, ah, you know, like you helped me with some things before in the past. You know what I mean? So he sent the record over to me, and he was just like, yo, but, you know, don't put it out on iTunes. Don't go hard, you know what I mean? But do what you need to do with it. So he sent it to me, and I ran with it, just shot the video.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to hearing Ghetto Millionaires featuring Drake. And speaking of Ghetto Millionaires, we have Baby Thad and Sita Monroe.
Yes, definitely.
Over here.
Definitely.
Got the heels off.
Yeah.
But this is my team right here. This is my foundation. Y'all might know Dad from American Cream Team.
Yes, sir. Shout out Ray and Ghost.
Yeah, I was gonna say you guys have pretty prestigious histories in the business.
Yeah.
You guys want to talk about that a little bit?
Down for a minute. Yeah, shout out Rain Ghost. Rest in peace to my boy Chip Banks. You know, that's my boy from Harlem who died. That was in my group, American Cream Team. You know, I still carry his memory in my heart every day. Shout out to Ray Kwan. I just got off the phone with Ray not too long ago. You know, when I spoke to him, he was in Canada. He's doing a lot of big things out in Canada. On my new CD coming out, Slumdog Millionaire, I have a song on there with Ray. Ghost is coming. So, but to give you a little history on me, you know, I go from a group called American Cream Team. It's a movie called Black and White, Robert Downey Jr., Brooke Shields, you know, Elijah Woods. You know, I starred in that movie, had a nice role. If you're looking for albums that I've been on, I was on Bulletproof Wallet's Ghostface album, Funkmaster Flex Volume 3, The Final Chapter, Raekwon's Immobilari album, Black and White soundtrack, Blue Streak soundtrack.
Yeah, you gotta say that one. Like, I've been on the Mobile Larry, you know what I'm saying? I've been on the Ghostface album with Bulletproof Wallace, you know what I mean? Like, you gotta, he's just so humble, like, my brother's just so humble with it, like, people still running up on him. It's on Showtime right now, it's movie on show, so people are, like, still kind of, he's just so humble with it, so, you know.
Yeah.
And I'll give him quite a production history and some rapping stuff yourself, right?
Yeah. I work with, my most previous work I'm mostly known for right now is a record called G'd Up I did for Max B. That featured my, me and my boy Henny made up, and we came up with something real magical, you know what I'm saying? Max B basically just kind of took the record, you know what I mean? Because he was so much in love with it. And then we ran with it, and then also really my, how can I say, my industry insight or everything that I got as far as education was from my brother Kid Capri. Kid Capri is really one of the main mentors for me that more schooled me to the game, you know what I mean? So Kid Capri is really what I would say is my mentor as far as business side.
How did you first hook up with him?
Me and Kid Capri, make a long story short, not even to give y'all too much, you know what I mean? Basically, his fiance at the time was managing me. She pretty much took a really big liking to me and basically started managing me and just basically just brought me around Kid from that point, you know what I mean? Once you meet somebody through somebody, you kind of, you know what I mean, get into it like, you know, well, you know, this is my type of guy right here, and it just kind of clicked from there. We just two alike, you know what I mean? And it was a blessing, you know what I mean? Like, when she did that for me, it kind of, like, changed things. Now I've been on a tour, I've been on the Hard Knock Life tour, I watched Jay-Z pick the Hard Knock Life beat right from behind the stage, you know what I mean? Run out while Kid was spinning it through the intermissions, playing the Annie. And he jumps out, like, I've been there to see all those things live, like, you know what I mean? And Busta Rhymes having people crying and stuff like that, you know what I mean? Like, it just kind of freaks you out a little bit, like, wow, I want to be there. And do I want to be there? You know what I mean? Like, you start questioning yourself, like,
sure.
You know what I mean? People are crying and all that just to touch you and stuff like that, and watching big records being made behind the scenes. But it was a blessing, you know what I mean? Going on those tours and seeing that life before I can even try to attempt to make it, you know what I mean?
Excellent. Sita, where do you fit into the equation here? What's
I'm kind of like new blood to the hip hop industry, but at the same time, I still have the same ambition, the same drive, and I'm just working on my new mixtape. You go to thisisgmb2b.com for future, you know, updates on Sita Mara.
Right, it's named after, you know, great movie.
Yeah,
right?
Great movie, and it's like it has like a little story behind it. Jennifer is my real name, so I thought it would be kind of catchy, you know, Jennifer's body, man eater, stuff like that.
Awesome. So how would you guys each describe either yourself or your groupmates' rap style and how you differ from each other?
I guess we all miss our own personalities.
Mm-hmm.
We got our own personalities. Like, Dad is very more in the shell. Like, Dad just keeps everything to himself and does it the way he want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
No questions asked. Sita is more, I guess you could say that, as you could probably see, I'm more spoken more than everybody, you know what I'm saying? Because everybody needs a voice, you know what I mean? But she's a little bit more on the tender side of things, but she attacks you when you don't see it, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
Everybody has, and then me, myself, I'm a jack of all trades, so whatever needs to be done, I'm going to do it, you know what I mean? So we just get in where we fit in, basically, as a family, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Now, you alluded to something a minute ago, saying that you saw Jay-Z choose the beat for the Hard Knock Life thing.
Right.
What was the story with that?
That was kind of ill, because I've never seen something like that created as you do tours and do shows. Like, a record was literally being made as an intermission, meaning like, as you do stage performances,
yeah,
you're making money doing your venue, but here it is, Jay-Z made $4 million just coming out through an intermission. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And had a multi-platinum record just by being in the presence. You understand what I'm saying? So if you're around it, you can be it. You understand what I'm saying? That's why I feel like no matter where I go and what I do, eventually I gotta make it, because I just, the knowledge of it alone is worth, you know what I mean, a lot of money. You know what I mean?
Yeah. How he picked that record?
He basically can't play the record in intermission. Like, you know, everybody went off, so when Busta Rhymes went off, after Put Your Hands Where I Can See,
mm-hmm,
Kid would play the beat, and Mark 45 King would give him a plate, because he used to press him in his house, and he put the end, it's a hard knock, man, and Kid would just play it in the intermissions, and Jay-Z would come out behind the curtain, like, yo, Kid, who joint is that? Because he saw, you know, how people's reacted to it, you know what I mean? So he was like, oh shit, this could be big. Like, he just runs out behind the curtain, like, yo, kid, I need that. You know what I'm saying? And he's like, yeah, I put you on the phone with the producer right there with 45 King. Boom. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that shit just happened. 2 weeks later, I'm in a club. That shit is crazy. Everybody's on the list. Because you know what I mean? Imagine just to see it happening. You know what I mean? And then see how people respond.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like, wow, like, and this is a slow 58 tempo beat.
Yeah, that's how
we're not talking about the Benjamins. We're not talking about like big records. Like, we talking about it's a hard knock life. Nobody's thinking
it's a slow record.
It's slow as hell. Yeah. You couldn't even do a two step to it. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
This is a beat you just in the club like this.
Like that.
So to watch that unfold, like, and that just one out of, you know what I mean? To see that happen, and I was just like, wow, like, okay. This is kind of ill right here that you can make that kind of magic happen.
Yeah. And that, why go the solo route instead of, you know, staying in a group or sort of under another artist's, you know, clique or whatever? Why go solo?
Because I felt like, you know, I had a lot of stuff on my chest that I just really wanted to get off, and it would have been kind of difficult getting it off as far as a group is concerned. And you know, to be honest with you, like, after Chip died, you know, everything, it just wasn't the same afterwards, you know? So, you know, things just kind of fell apart after that. So, you know, I know where I live at in Harlem, I had a lot of talented individuals and friends of mine that's very talented, multi-talented, such as my boy Generali, Street Banker, you know? And what we did was we all respected each other's art, and what we did was we all put it together and formed Ghetto Millionaires. And, you know, so far, so good. And, like, it's what we do is we'll do stuff as a group,
yeah.
Then we'll do branch off and do individual things to just to show that we can stand on our own 2 feet.
Awesome. And so you mentioned General, who's the another affiliate of you guys, right?
Yeah.
So
shout out, Jenny.
Yeah. So he had a hand in Fiesta, right?
Yeah.
And I think when we met the first time, you told me he wrote it as a rap.
Yeah, right? General told me the story how it happened, because I was like freaked out, like, how did you write Fiesta? First thing you're gonna think is like, this dude is really talented, like, he sounded like Jay-Z, but he's like his own person, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, where did that connect? And from what I understand, he wrote it as a rap. And he was in the studio in the actual booth, and he wrote it down on a rap, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. On a sheet of paper, whatever the case is. And basically, when R. Kelly came in to do something else in reference to the song, he saw it there, and just as they was breaking and playing around, he just ended up saying the shit. If you listen to Fiesta, it sounds like a rap, actually a rap song. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it kind of just tripped, you know, just kind of like boggled me a little bit. Like, okay, you know, that's interesting. You know what I'm saying? Like, we all had our fair share of watching things happen that people in the world respond to in a so much of a big way where it changed their lives. You know what I mean?
Right, right. And I want to talk to you about your production style for a second.
Okay.
The stuff I heard on the mixtapes really had kind of a soul music base to it. There was a lot of like real piano sounds. There were a bunch of kind of slower, soulful sounding beats. You know, you were talking about the Hard Knock Life being like a slow BPM record. Where'd that style come from?
Basically just being in Harlem, man. You just always, you know, you're always surrounded by a lot of the ghetto fabulous lifestyles and the music and the culture of the, you know, the whole Harlem renaissance. You know what I mean? Try to feel yourself and get in where you fit in. So what I did was I wanted to try to take something that was not too much different from where we're from, because a lot of, you know, you deal with jazz, you deal with these things, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of big jazz players live in our neighborhood. A lot of R&B singers, a lot of, you know, Anthony Hamilton lives literally across the street from that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right, just moved, you know what I'm saying, not too long ago, but you know what I mean? Gil Scott-Heron, you know what I mean? Like, he lived down the block. You know, a lot of, so we surrounded by so much, it's so influential, you know what I mean? And it was just one of those things, I couldn't go outside of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's embedded in me.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And Sita, since you know, started work with these folks, like, what have you learned from them, from their styles? Has it changed how you rap at all? Like, what's going on? Are you kind of doing your thing before?
I basically learned that when it comes to this, you just you can't really have no limit on what you're gonna say, because stuff is so crazy. You turn on the news and it seems like everybody's dying or it's a national disaster, so you really just have to be real. And hip hop is all about being real and true to the music. Not only being true to the music, but at the end of the day, still making a message that it can touch someone and they can relate. If they can't relate, then to me, it's not real hip hop.
Awesome. And what can we look forward to hearing on Jennifer's Body?
A lot of old. I'm real, like, I have an old soul. I'm young, but deep down inside, I'm really like soul, like Marvin Gaye, Billie Holiday. Like,
nice.
I like old samples.
She just did a hot record, so I figured I'd put that out there.
Yeah.
That Teddy Pendergrass sample. And it's came out with, it's called Coming
Nice.
Over.
Yeah,
it's called,
man.
Coming Over. It's special. I'm a big fan of it already, so I didn't produce it, but
right.
I'm a big fan of it already, so it's crazy. Go to the site, thisisjmb2b.com,
yeah.
Click on a picture and hear it. It's crazy.
Nice. And something sort of for all of you guys, all of your, you know, the mixtapes that I heard and all that have a real mix of subject matter, right? You have the street stuff, you have like the introspective stuff, you have the sort of lighthearted, funny things, or like, you know, odes to weed or whatever kind of like stuff is happening. You know what I mean? Why, you know, how do you keep the variety up like that?
Well, the music.
That tells me a lot about what I do.
Just basically tells us what the door tells me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever feeling that comes from the beat, that's basically dictates where I go with it. And a lot of stuff that I do is done according to moods, you know? If I'm stressed, you'll hear it. If I'm happy, you'll hear it, you know? So
what songs are you most stressed about?
What songs I'm more stressed on?
Like on your Formula CD, what song would you consider to be like? What song would you think?
The angry.
Right, the angry.
Yeah.
Painful, just crying. Just
Well, the song that I believe that I was the most aggressive on was the one with me and A Mafia.
Mm.
Like that was more my
I put it down?
Side. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It was more
Mafia.
I remember
them
from the
Clue
tapes and stuff, right?
A Mafia is a really big friend of mine, dad's and the family. A Mafia is a true survivor out here, man. He's doing his numbers deep in the game entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
He comes through and features on a couple of records. He's on my single Home of the Hustlers with him and Dad.
Yeah.
And you know, Mafia is a true dude, you know what I'm saying? Like, at the end of the day, he holds his own ground. Cameron basically worked through the Dipset Foundation, and he took it and ran with it. And now he's where he needs to be. He's the king of this shit, you know what I'm saying?
Shout out to Loaded Lux, too. I got a song on there with Loaded Lux called...
Yeah, that's real special.
I'm a beast. And, you know, like, the story behind that song was, like, a lot of the stuff that Ock does, he just does it from scratch. And Lux came through, and you know, Lux could be kind of intimidating to do a track with, because that boy is a problem for real. So, you know, I told Lux, like, Lux, I'm not gonna let you run through me on this song right here. So, you know, if I just held my own, I'm happy, you know? So, listen to that one right there. It's called I'm a Beast.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Alec, I wanted to talk for a second. One of your tunes is a real introspective. You have the tune about your mother and her passing, and you went so far as to do a video.
That's
before.
One of my favorite songs too.
And
yeah.
He didn't want to. That was a song I had to convince him to put.
I was
going to
ask,
yeah.
Like, why go so far as to make that a single? Like, was that weird for you at all?
You know what? Like Dad just said, I was in that mood that day. I was just feeling like that.
And that's an old song.
That's an
too.
Old song.
Yeah.
I did that song. My mother passed in 2009. I did the song maybe like in 2010.
Right.
So basically, I was feeling like that back in 2010.
Right.
It was one of those days. It was just still fresh. And I was just like, you know what? I want to do something, but not in a sad, sorry way. You know what I mean? Like more from an angle where it's like, just feel me. Just don't hear me, but feel me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if you went through this, I know you could feel this. You know, I didn't go for the views and all that was a good moment.
Yeah, and some of your rapping, that tune and some others, has, you know, definitely a strong storytelling side to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Who do you like on the storytelling tip? What other rappers do you really kind of take?
Slick Rick was my favorite. That's who I think I am when I'm doing a song. Like, if you listen to Dry Your Eye,
right,
off of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Dry Your Eye is a Slick Rick whole type of character right there. So Slick Rick is my number one storytelling rapper from, you know, day one.
Excellent. Thad, as far as the, you know, you hung with some of the Wu-Tang guys who were on Bulletproof Wallets and that. What was that like? You get the idea, you know, Ghostface persona is kind of this wild guy, you know what I mean?
Ghost is cool. You know, like I was more around Ray,
right,
more than any of them. But from what I get from them is they all have a lot of respect for each other, and they work well together when it's time for them to get together and work.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite out of all of them, to tell you the truth, is ODB.
Yeah,
and I only met him once.
Yeah,
I met him once. It's a funny story because we was having a listening party at for Ray's album, for one of Ray's albums, in the studio, and you know they had food and all kind of stuff. The RZA was there. They had Preston and everything. And you know I'm a big fan of ODB, so I see him. So to myself, I'm like, oh shit, that's ODB. You know what I mean? So I'm standing here, like, let's say this counter, and he comes up to me and was like, yo, got any more plates? I'm like, nah, I don't got no more plates. So this man actually went in the garbage. I'm not lying. Took a plate out the garbage, scraped the bones off, and made a plate. I said, I love this dude right here, man. It's not an act. He's old, dirty bastard. For real. So, you know, I kind of enjoyed that part right there for meeting him, man. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. His funeral was right down the block from my building. His funeral was on 141st on St. Nicholas. So, you know, that was real interesting to meet old dirty.
I believe it. And you work with another, you know, guys from Harlem, obviously you work with Herb McGruff, who has a deep history in Harlem, going back to the early 90s and probably before.
Yeah, we go way back with Gruff. Like Harlem is broken down into sections. Like, it's up the hill, down the hill. It's up the hill, which is Sugar Hill.
Right.
And it's down the hill, which we consider the valley. And you know, like, people from the hill is kind of different than people from down the hill.
How do you mean?
Like, from my point of view, it's like people from down the hill, like, they more violent down the hill for some reason. It's like, it's just real. It's
Cannonville,
man. Yeah. Up the hill, we more into hustling. We more into the drugs because it has Broadway right there. That's like where most, if not all, of the drugs come from on that side right there, with the Dominicans on that side. So, but down the hill, they more into different things. So, you know,
blood to the Crips.
Yeah,
it's a little game.
Now it is.
Right. Yeah. That didn't even start till
the
late 90s, right?
Yeah. We didn't have that problem a long time ago. Harlem. It wasn't about killing and who's. Well, everybody was eating, everybody's getting money, and having fun and taking care of their family.
It's a dramatic change. But I knew Gruff through my boy Mike Boogie. Mike Boogie was featured on Haters Enough, and you know, that's how we met Mace and all that kind of stuff. And you know, we had a record that we saw Gruff that I had, that's on the Formula CD, that I was like, y'all can hear Gruff on this. So I was like, alright, we'll get him. So, you know, we called Gruff. He came through and laid his verse, and we even have it on YouTube, him laying his, you know, making of that record right there. So it's called Crown Pays.
That's all the record. So Cedar, who for you is the other than these two guys, and maybe General, who's the quintessential Harlem rapper? Which rapper screams Harlem the most to you?
He's not more of a rapper. He's more just like a legend in the game. I would say Diddy. Like, Diddy has really put a stamp as far as Harlem has the swag, the talk, the slang, all of that. He, like, all around the board. If you're from out of town and you hear Harlem, you either think Cam'ron or Diddy. So Right. I would have to say Diddy.
I hear that. Have you guys ever run into him?
I mean,
you know.
I mean, we came across Puff a few times. Like I said, that was the first tour I was on, was the Puff Daddy and the Family tour.
Mm-hmm.
That was when, you know, like Mace was 50 Cent back then. It was kind of like, you know, he couldn't even go to the bathroom. Like, shit was just like I said, crazy just when you see it happening. So when I was around Diddy, and to see how you treat people and be around people, like, you know, it's just a human being, just like everybody does.
Yeah, yeah.
You got certain people you like, certain people you don't like. It's just that when you're on that platform, they look at you like, oh, he's a fucking person, but he's just a regular dude trying to come up in the world like the rest of you.
Regular dude who doesn't sleep.
Right. He just works harder. You know what I mean? And that's why I think I'm so inspired, because to see him go from literally, like, changing his kid, bringing his son with him, bringing Justin with him, changing him, then doing the rehearsals, then showing people how to dance, and directing the video, then if he has to perform, then he made sure the choirs, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
To see a person, that's what made me like, oh, okay, you can do it all. Like, I mean, maybe not too much to overwork yourself, but if you focus on a couple of things, you can get them all done at the same time. You know
yeah,
what
yeah.
Mean?
So what's coming up for Ghetto Millionaires now? What's on the horizon?
We are promoting all Who Wants to Be a Millionaire right now, which is my CD. I'm going to follow up with another one, I think it's September, Sex, Lies, and Alibis. And then Cedar's going to drop. Between Cedar and Thad, I think most likely we'll be finishing the year out with Thad, most likely.
Excellent. Any plans for like
some, these songs we need.
Okay.
Certain records I'm asking, I'm trying to get from them. But most likely Cedar will be dropping out of October, and I'll be dropping another CD next month.
Awesome, and more videos. So do you have
definitely the videos is definitely stepping up. Like, we're gonna start making little movies and short films. You know what I mean?
Nice. And you obviously have the t-shirts going on.
Yeah.
Any more plans for the clothing game? Or?
Yeah, I gotta get yours. This is GMB2B.com. Listen, we got the custom made joints we're working on for the girls. You know what I mean? We're gonna have a little thing going around. It's a little ghetto fire right now, you know what I'm saying? Because we're doing ghetto fire, you know what I'm saying? But we basically got some things coming with the patches, custom made, you know what I'm saying? So you can get your Ghetto Millionaire shirts if you go to thisisgmb2b.com. That's thisisgmb2b.com. Hit the store, go shopping. Ball out, get your Ghetto Millionaire shirt. All
right, we have ours, Rap Genius, here with Ghetto Millionaires.
Yes,
right.
Off 2Gs,
yeah.
Cedar Monroe, Baby Thad.
That's
yeah.
Right.
And shout out to General. We'll get you next time.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks a lot.
Quiet as Kept Rider, Chip Saw, J Money, Ghetto Millionaire Philly.
Ghetto Philly.
That's what we do.
You've been listening to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. If you're curious about any of the songs mentioned on this show, you can find lyrics, audio, and explanations at rapgenius.com. Rap Genius is dedicated to decoding, annotating, and analyzing hip-hop lyrics. Join us next week when we talk to rap academic Trisha Rose about her seminal books Black Noise and the Hip-Hop Wars, The State of Rap Today, and lots more. Outside the Lines with Rap Genius is hosted and written by Sean Sotero, a.k.a. Same Old Sean. To make sure you never miss an episode of the show, please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can reach me with your thoughts about Outside the Lines via Twitter. I'm at Same Old Sean. That's S-H-A-W-N. This podcast was recorded and filmed by Dan Berger and engineered by Brian Penny at the beautiful Three Egg Studios in Brooklyn, New York. Our show's intern is Sunny Kahara. Intro and outro music by Psionic. Interlude music by Sir Loin. This week's show is dedicated to Chris Darnick. Get well soon, buddy. I'm your host, Same Old Sean, and I'll see you next week on Outside the Lines with Rap Genius.